Transmitiendo desde el Instituto de la Judicatura Federal, esto es Procrastinando, un programa de filosofía del derecho con un carácter totalmente informal. Say what you will. Good love is hard to find. Have that not feel. The hurting kind. We'll take a lot of money, buy up on the pain. Take a lot of honey, fill me up, put me back.
Good morning, Professor Robert Alexis. It's a pleasure to have you here in Mexico, and the real pleasure to talk with you about your work for the law faculty at Proyector Krausel. Mm-hmm. My first question is one basic question in your work. What is legal reasoning? How can we understand what is legal reasoning? Is it different from reasoning itself, or is it a kind of practice reasoning?
Well, in the center of my theory of legal argumentation is the special case thesis. The special case thesis says that legal argumentation is a special case of general practical argumentation. General practical argumentation concerns the question what one should do, what one should not do, and what one is allowed to do. That is, normative or practical questions. But as a general practical discourse, it has no institutional framework. Legal argumentation, as a special case of practical argumentation, takes place in an institutional framework, which is defined by legislation, which is defined by jurisdiction, that is, the precedents the court has made play a great role in legal argumentation, and legal dogmatics, as it is made at the universities in legal science, plays a role. In short, legal argumentation is practical argumentation under the condition of legislation, the law made by legislation, under the condition, first, that was the first thing. Second, under the condition of the precedents which have been made by the jurisdiction and the legal dogmatic as made by legal science. That is my answer to your question.
Does a rational legal argument has limits? The rationality in a legal argument has limit, or it's unlimited?
Rationality in real life always has limits. We can try to achieve the correct answer, but human beings always can make mistakes. Therefore, we have the possibility to be rational. We can be rational. But that does not exclude that there are limits. And for this reason, we have a permanent discourse. If there would be no limits, we could say, well, we have the right answer, and now we need no further discussion. We always need further discussion. And therefore, the limits is not something we must worry about. For we have the medicine against the limits, that is a permanent discussion.
And most of your work on legal argumentation relates on Habermas' work. And one of the major critics that Habermas has is about the good faith in an argument. What do you think about that problem? Because so many people say we cannot trust on a good faith in an argument.
Well, the question is whether there exist arguments at all. There is a line of thinking often designed as rhetorics, that when we talk with other people, we simply try to manipulate them. That is a behavioristic or psychological theory of argumentation. In this view, argumentation is not a means for approximating to truth or correctness. It is simply an instrument of manipulation of other people. I think that there exists a difference between good and bad arguments, and therefore argumentation is possible in spite of the limits of rationality. That is, we have no perfect rationality, but we have a certain amount of rationality, and we can improve it always, and that is enough.
In your work, Constitutional Rights, you try to reconstruct the reasoning behind jurisprudence and try to provide a general theory of justice, a general application theory of justice. My question is, how can this theory fight or avoid adjudication in a judge?
In my theory of constitutional rights, I do not address justice directly. But I address justice indirectly, because the main elements of justice are human rights. A society which does not respect human rights is, per definition, an unjust society. Therefore, your question is correct. It concerns natural justice. And now, in my book on constitutional rights, I mainly concerned how constitutional rights argumentation works. In the theory of legal argumentation, I have legal argumentation in general. In the theory of constitutional rights, I concentrate on constitutional and also human rights. And my main thesis is that rational constitutional rights argumentation is possible. And that is my theory of balancing.
In this work of the constitutional rights, you talk about a theory of horizontal effect.
Yes.
You try to suggest that we should work on horizontal effect. What is horizontal effect?
Well, in the tradition of the 19th century, human rights have been a legal relation between the individual and the state. The horizontal effects results from making constitutional rights, and with them human rights, relevant for all legal questions. That is, if you want to have a picture, not one line from the state to the individual, but a triangle. The one citizen, the state, and the other citizen. So that constitutional rights become relevant even in civil right, in civil law, between one person and the other person. And if you look at the international discussion, sometimes it is called also radiation effect. Radiation, the constitutional right radiates through the whole legal system, and that is very important. Because law always raises a claim to justice, and in order to be just, all legal relations must be in accordance, may not contradict constitutional and human rights.
In this same book, you talk about the duty of optimized principle, and the normative effects of the system, and the structure of the we have to optimize the structure of the normative system, and we have to do some balancing in the system. How can we this make possible in a system?
Yes, in my theory of constitutional rights, the most important thesis is that constitutional rights have the character of principles, and principles are optimization requirements. And my point is that we cannot have an adequate theory of constitutional rights without principles theory. What is the reason for this? The reason for this is that if constitutional rights are optimization requirements, then necessarily the proportionality principles follow from this. If you want to have a proportionality test where interferences with constitutional rights are concerned, if you want to have a proportionality test, then you must say they are principles, and if you say they are principles, that is optimization requirements, logical from this follows that you must have the proportionality analysis. And why proportionality? Well, proportionality is the only rational form of judging interferences with constitutional rights as either constitutional or unconstitutional. Therefore, proportionality is the central concern of the story.
That's why you say that we have to optimize the system to what is legally possible.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. We have two dimensions of optimization. Optimization relative to the factual possibilities. That are the tests of suitability and necessity, the factual possibility. That is the question of whether interferences with constitutional rights can be avoided without any cost for other rights or collective goods. That is Pareto optimality. That is a rather easy test, and nearly everybody agrees that we must have this test. But then we have, that is the first principle, sub-principle of the principle of proportionality, the principle of suitability. The second sub-principle is a principle of necessity. And the third sub-principle is a principle of proportionality in the narrower sense. That is optimization relative to the legal possibilities. And that we have when two principles collide. For instance, freedom of press. The press wants to inform the people about the private life of a prominent person. On the one hand, prima facie, the press may make a story about this person. And on the other hand, the right to privacy and personality. That requires prima facie no information of the public about private things of a prominent person. And you can solve this problem, and you have everything. In the case of abortion, for instance, you have prima facie the right of the fetus or nascitus to live, and on the other hand, the right of the mother, the pregnant woman, to her personality, to determine her life. And then you have, again, proportionality at the third stage, and you have to make a balancing.
Here in Mexico, we have a very strong tradition in Kelsen font. How actual is Kelsen for the problems that we have in the global legal systems?
Well, Kelsen, I am a non-positivist, and Kelsen is a positivist. And if at first glance, one might think that I say no to everything Kelsen have said, but that's not the case. Kelsen is such a great author because there are so many things in his word everybody must accept independently from the positivism questions. For instance, his concept of a norm, his concept of legal validity, his concept, I do not accept it completely, but important parts. And for instance, in my book, the concept and the validity of law, in the English, reply to legal positivism. I accept even his theory of basic norm, Grundnorm, with one exception. Not everybody, every norm which is authoritatively issued is valid. Not everybody, each and every norm. We must make an exception clause and so on. But that is, Kelsen is an author who will be important in the next century as he is in our century. But in some points, I say that Kelsen is wrong, especially in 2 points. The first point is Kelsen says that every content, everything can be law. And I think in the German edition, in the first pages, page 34 or 32, he says that even concentration camps in which people are killed for racial reasons can be the content of positive law. And I say against Kelsen, no. That is the Radbruch formula. That's the first point. And the second point is Kelsen has no theory of legal argumentation. Kelsen has a theory of subsumption, but if we have a hard case, or as Herbert Hart calls this, the open texture of law, then according to Kelsen, the judge has an empowerment, eine Ermächtigung, an empowerment, to decide as he wants, even for political reasons. And I say no. He is not free to decide in hard cases, the judge. And at the higher courts, especially at Supreme Courts, we always have, and constitutional courts, hard cases, difficult cases, in which there is a discussion about what is the right solution. And then the judges have not the power, not the legal empowerment to decide as they want for political reasons. They have the duty to find the decision which is justified by the best arguments. Therefore, 2 points of difference to Kelsen: the limits of law, the utmost border of law. Extreme injustice is no law, against Kelsen. And second, we have legal argumentation which tries to find the legally correct answer.
To those who have read your work, it's clear that you say that legal positivism is not enough. And one question that emerged from this is, what is your points of agreement with Dworkin, and in which part of the Dworkin work you disagree?
Yes, when I was young, I was very much influenced by Dworkin, Dworkin has developed the distinction between rules and principles, I have tried to get it in more exact terms. And what Dworkin addresses as the dimension of weight, I have tried to give a more exact form in the theory of optimization requirements and in the theory of balancing. But the early Dworkin was very close to my theory. The late Dworkin has removed himself more and more away from my theory. And I have answered already in some writings to this. Dworkin, in his late writings, has become a critic of balancing, like Habermas. Habermas and Dworkin make the same point. They say balancing, that is proportionality analysis, balancing, Habermas says, is irrational, And Dworkin says balancing is a kind of economic consideration. And economic considerations are not compatible with rights. In this point, I completely disagree with Dworkin as well, the late Dworkin, with Habermas. My thesis is balancing is a rational form of argumentation. That is my answer to Habermas. And my answer to Dworkin is balancing has nothing to do with money or such things. If I make a balancing between the right of the pregnant women to personality on the one hand and the right to live to the unborn child, that has nothing to do with economic analysis of law.
Well, Dr. Alexis, it has been a pleasure to talk with you for the law faculty.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me too.